Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Warrantless Vehicle Searches Post-Decision Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 21st, 2009, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Arizona v. Gant. In this case, the court considered whether police may conduct a warrantless search of a car if its recently arrested occupant no longer poses a threat to officer safety or preservation of evidence. In a 5-4 decision delivered by Justice Stevens, the court held that police may conduct a warrantless vehicle search incident to an arrest only if it is reasonable to believe either that the arrestee may access the vehicle at the time of the search or that evidence of the offense for which the arrest was made might be found in the vehicle. To discuss the decision, we have Supreme Court Advocate Eric S. Jaffe. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Jaffe.
Hello, this is Eric Jaffe. I am here today to discuss the Supreme Court's decision last term in Arizona versus Gant. I'd like to thank the Federalist Society for inviting me to do this podcast and for arranging for all of you to be able to hear it. In Arizona v. Gant, the Supreme Court addressed the scope of the so-called search incident to arrest exception to the Fourth Amendment's probable cause and warrant requirements. A number of courts around the country, relying on the Supreme Court's earlier decision in New York versus Belton, had held that virtually any search of a vehicle incident to the arrest of an occupant or a recent occupant of that vehicle was lawful, even absent probable cause or a warrant. Other courts, however, including the Arizona Supreme Court in the case on review, in the Gant case, relying on an earlier Supreme Court case of Chimmel versus California, had held that vehicle searches were only lawful in order to protect the officers from the risk of a weapon in the vehicle or from the destruction of evidence in that vehicle in circumstances where the person being arrested still had access to the vehicle. In Gant, therefore, a court was considering the situation of a recent occupant of a vehicle who had been arrested for a traffic violation for driving with a suspended license. The suspect had been arrested, handcuffed, and locked in the back of the patrol car prior to the officers conducting the search. So in that situation, the suspect had no possibility of accessing the vehicle that he had been driving. Following their placement of the suspect in the patrol car, the officers searched the vehicle incident to arrest, but without probable cause, discovered cocaine in the pocket of a jacket in the back of the car, and the suspect was then charged with drug violation. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court, in an opinion by Justice Stevens, held that the search incident to arrest exception to the Fourth Amendment did not apply because there was no danger to the safety of the officers and no possibility of the suspect being able to destroy evidence in the vehicle. Justice Stevens wrote the opinion, was joined by the interesting lineup of Justices Scalia, Souter, Thomas, and Ginsburg. Justice Scalia also wrote an opinion concurring, stating that he would have actually gone further and said that under no circumstances would such a search be permissible because the officers always have the option of securing the suspect and then preserving their safety, but joined the majority opinion in order to form a 5-judge majority. Justice Breyer wrote a brief dissent arguing that stare decisis favored staying with the earlier rule laid out in New York versus Belton, which pretty much gave blanket authority for a search incident to arrest without any case-by-case consideration of whether there was concerns over officer safety or the destruction of evidence. Justice Alito, joined by the remaining four, including Justice Breyer, so joined by Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Kennedy, and Justice Breyer, wrote a longer dissent arguing that stare decisis favored maintaining the belt and bright line rule allowing such searches and that there were no justifications for getting rid of stare decisis in this instance. Turning to the particulars of the majority opinion, what is most important to take away from that is the general rule that the court stated that a vehicle search is not authorized incident to arrest after the arrestee has been secured and cannot access the interior of the vehicle. They based this decision on the principles outlined in the Chimmel case, which talked about the concerns over an arrestee's immediate control of an area in the vehicle where he might gain access to a weapon or to destructible evidence. The court laid out a small exception to this rule, however, concluding that given the unique circumstances of an automobile's arrest and search, it would still be reasonable to search incident for arrest when there's a reasonable belief that there is evidence of the offense of arrest in the vehicle. And that exception was based on a concurring opinion by Justice Scalia in an earlier case called Thornton versus United States. Now, in discussing why they went back to a more restrictive version of the original Chimmel rule and got rid of the more permissive Belton rule, the court explained that the courts that had followed a more permissive version and interpreted Belton to allow many searches undervalued the privacy concerns with sort of exploratory searches and sort of overvalued the need for such searches, given that officers routinely secure the suspect and there's little, if any, risk in most circumstances of danger to the officer once they've, of course, handcuffed a suspect and stuffed him in the back of a police car, and similarly little danger of the destruction of evidence where the arrestee has no access. They noted a couple of exceptions to their rule, however. The first exception, as already noted, was that one could continue to search based on reasonable suspicion for evidence of the offense of arrest. Other exceptions would include situations where, for whatever reasons, for the particular circumstances, an officer was not able to completely secure the scene. For example, if there were multiple arrestees, all of whom had not been perfectly secured and some of whom might access the car, or situations unique to the possible loss of evidence, maybe by third parties standing about who might access the vehicle. Those exceptions don't seem to be of a particular importance and are obvious and common sense exceptions without real impact on the general rule that you can't just search incident to arrest without any further justification, probable cause, or a warrant. Now, turning to the objections made by the dissenters, the majority said that this was not a situation of overruling Belton, but rather simply narrowing Belton to its facts and limiting the unnecessary use of overbroad language in Belton. So while Belton had indeed laid out a fairly bright-line rule that says you could search incident to arrest regardless of whether an arrestee had access to the vehicle, the facts of Belton were somewhat narrower than that. There were four individuals who had been in the car, who had been separated but had not been cuffed or put into a police car. There was at least some theoretical risk that one of those individuals could access the car while the officer was occupied with one of the other individuals, and there was no backup on the scene to help secure the arrestees. In that situation, Belton really could have been interpreted and was interpreted by Justice Stevens as an ordinary application of Chimmel in the particular context of that arrest and the needs of that arrest. So rather than overruling Belton, as the dissent had accused the majority of doing, the majority simply interpreted it as narrowing and distinguishing Belton and limiting it to its facts. Two other points of interest, it seems, from the majority opinion is that while they recognize that it will be a rare case that an officer cannot secure the scene, they maintained the possibility that if the facts justified it, a search of the vehicle would be permissible. They also allowed searches based on reasonable suspicion for evidence of the offense of arrest, but not necessarily for evidence of other potential offenses. Searches based on other potential offenses would still need probable cause, at which point, of course, you could search under any circumstances. But for the offense of arrest, the standard was lower to reasonable suspicion. One might interpret this as being fairly reasonable, since one imagines the police officers would have had probable cause at the outset for making the arrest in the first place. And having had such probable cause, the need to search for evidence of that same offense could be based on a slightly lower standard of reasonable suspicion. Turning to Justice Scalia's concurring opinion, Justice Scalia argued that given the unlikely situation of an officer being unable to secure the scene prior to the search, there was no need for the court's sort of slight exception for fact-specific cases, and they should lay down a general rule that searches incident to arrest that lack probable cause or a warrant would in general violate the Fourth Amendment. He argued that making a potential exception based upon the circumstances of the case where the suspect is not secured would simply encourage police officers to not fully secure suspects in order to be able to search, and he thought that that was a poor incentive. Thus, he would have gone slightly further, but joined the majority opinion, simply to create a court and thus to have a single rule from the Supreme Court. Turning to the dissents, Justice Breyer made a fairly straightforward argument that Belton said what it said. It established a bright-line rule whereby searches incident to arrest were permissible even if it was unlikely that a suspect could access the vehicle, and hence he would have stuck with stare decisis, finding no adequate reasons to reject Belton. Justice Alito made a similar argument that Belton was not materially distinguishable, that even under the facts of Belton, there was not much of a chance of the suspects accessing the vehicle, and hence Belton's rule would apply regardless of the underlying Chimmel rationale of the need to secure the vehicle from possible access. Justice Alito also noted that the Belton rule provides at least a somewhat brighter line than the new rule by the courts and would avoid uncertainty in a variety of situations where police officers would simply be able to search the vehicle and wouldn't have to make case-specific judgments regarding whether or not there was some risk of access or risk of destruction of the evidence. Justice Alito similarly pointed out some inconsistencies in the exceptions in the court's new rule, particularly the exception for searching for evidence of the offense of arrest, finding very little difference between such evidentiary searches and searches for evidence of other offenses, i.e. not for the offense of arrest, but say for a secondary offense, where if you're letting them go into the car anyway, there's no reason not to let them search on a reasonable suspicion given the unusual nature of the car. Thus, Justice Alito would have stuck with stare decisis, finding the original rule was a justifiable rule, and also finding that the new rule substituted by the court wouldn't materially reduce the amount of uncertainty and would just restrain a number of searches that for years police officers had been doing in reliance on Belton. Overall, therefore, it was a fairly straightforward dissent without a whole lot of debate about what the proper rule necessarily should be, though a little bit of defense of Belton, but in general, primarily based on stare decisis. One additional note from the dissent is that Justice Alito noted that the majority opinion did not seem to address the situation in which the search of a vehicle would be justified because third parties, people who were not arrested, might still gain access to the car and pose a threat, or situations where they might gain access to the car and destroy evidence. In those situations, Justice Alito, I think, correctly understood the court's decision to permit a search since the scene would not have been secured. A couple of things I think worth noting about these opinions are as follows. First of all, it strikes me that the Chimmel rule, that warrantless searches that are not based upon probable cause are properly limited to exigent circumstances, which is basically what Chimmel had argued. They're limited to a situation where there's a danger to the officers that can't be handled without a search, or there's some risk that evidence will be destroyed. Now, while that is a perfectly sensible rule, it seems that even the new rule by the court in Gantt doesn't hew closely enough to the rationale underlying Chimmel. So while it certainly maintains the Chimmel line of exigency with regard to weapons-based searches, searching for officer safety, but when it comes to destruction of evidence, it seems to allow a lower standard for a search, a reasonable suspicion standard, notwithstanding that there's no risk of evidence being destroyed. Why one would go there strikes me as less than obvious, particularly since in the context of an arrest, officers certainly would be able to secure the vehicle. I don't think there would be any limitation on that. And if the vehicle was indeed involved in the offense, arguably might have to tow it and take it in, at which point there would certainly be an inventory search. But even in a situation where there was no need to take the vehicle into the station or impound it as part of the arrest, officers certainly could secure a vehicle, and following such securing of the vehicle could obtain an arrest warrant if they had probable cause. If they lacked probable cause, it's hard to imagine why they get to search. If the theory under Thornton, for example, would be that allowing a reasonable suspicion search is okay because it somehow piggybacks on the probable cause for arrest, one would imagine that you could get probable cause for the search as well. If the probable cause for the arrest is not sufficient to create probable cause for the search of the vehicle, then it's hard to imagine why you get to search that vehicle anyway based on the lower standards simply because of proximity to the arrested person. So in that sense, I think Arizona versus Gantt did not go far enough and continued to allow what seems to be an unjustified exception for evidentiary searches in situations where there is neither a warrant nor probable cause, simply because the suspect has been arrested in some proximity to a vehicle. As the court noted, the privacy concerns here are not trivial, and it's hard to imagine what outweighs those privacy concerns, given there would be certainly time to have a warrant issued if there was probable cause, and there is no realistic possibility of destruction of the evidence. Of course, this is not talking about situations in which there is a possibility of destruction of the evidence by third parties, even if not by the person being arrested, so by other occupants of the vehicle or by other persons who might have access to the vehicle after the fact. In those situations, it seems that Chimmel's sort of exigent circumstances justification would apply relatively in full force, and that would be raised here. Other sort of concerns are the court's sort of general notion that it's okay to search for other offenses, search for evidence of other possible offenses without a warrant if there's probable cause. Once again, it's hard to imagine once a vehicle has been secured why you would give up the warrant requirement in those circumstances, even if there was probable cause. That would be enough to get you the warrant, but once the vehicle is secured, one has difficulty imagining why there is a need for an immediate search in the absence of exigent circumstances rather than for a somewhat delayed search after following proper Fourth Amendment procedures. Overall, however, I guess it seems that Gant is certainly a step in the right direction. It re-energizes the privacy concerns underlying the Fourth Amendment and certainly recognized in Chimmel. It stops sort of this haphazard exploratory searching that Belton seemed to encourage. And in particular, it may well stop sort of arbitrary arrests whose only justification was to be able to search a vehicle. So when you have minor traffic violations that theoretically could justify an arrest but wouldn't ordinarily do that, it strikes me that if you can't automatically search a vehicle, it might reduce on the amount of arrests for fairly innocuous traffic infractions. So overall, it seems like a positive step in the right direction. It arguably did not go far enough. It strikes me that at some point the court might want to reconsider why you would have an exception to the warrant and probable cause requirements of the Fourth Amendment in any but most exigent of circumstances, just because an exception would make it easier to enforce the law hardly seems to be a justification for creating such an exception, and indeed the Fourth Amendment recognizes that it's trying to make certain types of law enforcement, or at least certain types of law investigation, more difficult as a protection of citizen privacy and overbearing government action. As to whether or not this was a proper situation in which to ignore stare decisis, if you believe the dissent, or whether it was simply a narrowing of an overly broad statement in earlier cases, I am inclined to think that the majority had the better of that argument, and that even if one were to assume that Belton was a full-blown holding rather than an overbroad statement of the law in factual circumstances that didn't necessarily support that statement, this is just such a case where overruling such earlier precedent would be justified. If you accept the notion that non-exigent searches incident to arrest are indeed a significant violation of privacy, and I do accept that notion, then there are inadequate justifications for maintaining a rule that fairly blatantly ignored Fourth Amendment concerns and ignored fairly express requirements of probable cause under the Fourth Amendment. So at some point, police reliance in the past on such searches wouldn't justify continuing to do those searches in the future. If one would make the rule prospective, that would certainly solve any reliance interests and the difficulty of teaching police officers that no, you can no longer do exploratory searches every time you arrest a vehicle's occupant or recent occupant hardly seems to justify maintaining an unconstitutional rule. So in that respect, it strikes me that the majority indeed got it right. While they certainly noticed and considered the stare decisis implications of Belton, I think they were correct in holding that Belton either was properly narrowed to its facts and that any sort of overbroad statements of the law within Belton weren't necessary to that opinion. I would go with the majority on that rather than the two dissents, and that's it. Hopefully this has helped all of you get some better sense of what the Supreme Court did in Arizona v. Gant and the progress of Fourth Amendment law, at least the fits and starts of Fourth Amendment law, in giving a little more weight to privacy and a little less weight to state interests of law enforcement, as I think it should be. Again, thank you to the Federalist Society for inviting me to do this, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.